Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Jennifer Jaworski, and I am with Adoption Associates of Michigan. This is Adoption Associates' premier talk radio blog show. Adoption Associates and its staff are trusted leaders in adoption and have placed over 5,200 children into loving homes since 1990. Adoption Associates advocates, supports, and nurtures both birth families and adoptive families, and helping all families grow through the adoption process is important to us. We have offices that are located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and the mid-Michigan Saginaw region. And our private adoption services are available throughout all of Michigan. One of Adoption Associates' commitments is to this podcast program, so we are very grateful to you, our listeners, for being with us. We do hope that you find this forum to be inspirational, educational, and thought-provoking. Today, I am excited to bring to our show Jared. Jared, I believe you are on the line. Is that right?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jared. Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Oh, it's no problem.
Today, we're going to have a conversation entitled From Challenges to Achievements, and this is a story of transracial adoption. We are very grateful to Jared for coming on to talk about how adoption has impacted his life very personally. And Jared, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and just get us started off today by sharing a little bit about your experience with adoption.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm now 20 years old, and I was adopted into a white family. So I have my mom and dad. My dad is actually from New Zealand, and I have a sister that's biological to my parents, and then I have a brother and myself were adopted from actually two separate families. So my experience with adoption actually has been really good. There's been obviously a lot of hardship that comes with it that, you know, 9 times out of 10, like, my parents couldn't understand, just because they're not the same color as I am. They're not black. And I don't know, it's just growing up in a family that's just super loving and super understanding has just been really, really good. And that's super important to have, you know, the mom and dad there. And I know we might talk about this later, but just the adoption from my birth mom standpoint was like such a good idea, and to a point like where I'm just so thankful that she did that so I can have a mother and a father in my life. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And so how old were you at the time of your adoption, Jared?
I was a baby. Like, I think I've been told I was in foster care for literally like a day, like when my papers were kind of going through, and then, I was officially adopted. So, yeah.
Okay. And if you'd like to share or maybe what you know or what do you know about the circumstances of your birth mother's decision to make an adoption plan for you, did you want to talk about that, or what do you know about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can definitely talk about the situation that happened. And so I actually found out, I don't know if it was at the beginning of this year or last year, but my mom sat me down and she gave me an envelope and was finishing my adoption story. And I mean, I knew most of it. I have one picture of my birth mom, but I didn't know who my birth dad was. And long story short, the reason I was adopted was because there was a guy that broke into my mother's house and actually raped her. And so that's where I came from. And all my life, and again, I think we'll talk about this later, but all my life, I felt like I was a mistake. And according to the world at that point, I was a mistake. And just coming out of like a rape like that and a situation like that, but God had a plan for me, and he brought me into a loving family that has taken care of me and obviously still takes care of me. I love my family so much and put them first. And so the reason I was adopted was, yeah, there's that situation, but my birth mom wanted me to have a loving family that could take care of me, that could support me with two loving parents and loving siblings. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So can we talk about your childhood experience experiences a little bit. You touched on that a little bit earlier about the makeup of your family, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about what you remember from your youth and growing up in your family.
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely went through all those stages that the typical kid goes through. I mean, I was made fun of in school quite a bit, and you know, and kids either way are going to make fun of you no matter who you are. I mean, and it's one of those things where, like, I remember getting made fun of because of my hairline and stuff like that, because my mom would cut my hair and there was nothing wrong with that, but I didn't have that clean fade or, you know, anything like that. So kids, I remember, would make fun of that. And I had my head not quite shaved down to bald, but just like more of like a buzz cut. And they would joke that I looked like a bald lady and like from Africa. And I was like, why do you have to really stoop that low, you know, to make fun of me like that? And, but anyway, and actually later in life, I went to Africa and realized how beautiful those women were that, did shave their head and stuff like that. So, and that's more for later, but, and I mean, I actually struggled with dyslexia. So, if you don't know what dyslexia is, it's like a reading disorder, and dyslexia is like such a huge term, and I kind of explain it like how people explain autism, where there's like a gigantic spectrum, and I'm more right in the middle, or on the higher end even, just being diagnosed with dyslexia. And so I have trouble with everything from spelling to reading and writing. Like I can hear it in my mind and see it in my mind, but I can't get it down on paper. But I think the coolest thing about my dyslexia is, well, and slash the miracle, is that I can't really read a book. I have like a super low, low grade reading level, but I can read music really, really well. So music doesn't jump around on the page and stuff like that. And that's what a lot of people will think, is like, well, dyslexia is only just words jumping around on the page. And actually it's a very, very broad term. So, but yeah, I got made fun of in school all the time until about fifth grade, where I started to grow, and I actually grew taller than all of my friends. But in fifth grade, I ended up stopped growing, and now my friends all got taller than me in sixth grade. So it was kind of disappointing in that aspect. But yeah, so I played instruments, and I started playing sports in fifth grade. But we can definitely talk about that in a little bit too. But yeah.
So. Okay. Yep. So I remember when you and I were chatting offline previously, you had shared with me one of your early turning points, if you will, that you began to view things a little bit differently, was in third grade because of your teacher. Could you share about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely will like name drop on this podcast right now. But so my teacher was her name is Mrs. Ritter. She works at Potter's House, and I don't know, she really changed, like, just even in third grade, changed my life and made me feel like I mattered. I had it at home, and like I knew that my grandparents loved me and my parents loved me and my siblings loved me. But the problem was, when you're in school, you're only at home for, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day. Like, you know, you're at school 8 hours of the day. So you need to be, loved, there too. And being made fun of it just became part of my life. And I started to hate myself and hate my life. But I would say, like, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Ritter, made me feel like I mattered. And she took time out of her day to help tutor me. And she had special people come in to help me with my homework. And I tell this story every time, but there's the only thing I remember or distinctly remember from school is actually from her class, which is a verse, Psalm 1. It was a Christian school, works at the Potter's House, and she's still a teacher there. And I got to surprise her not too long ago at her school. And I get the privilege now to go back and speak in her class at some point here, just about my job now and what I do and the struggles that I went through in her class and other classes too. So yeah, she was a big turning point in my life.
Well, and one of the things that stood out to me, Jared, was when you talked about your third grade teacher, that it wasn't only what she said, but how she made you feel, that you,
that's right,
you believed from her that you mattered.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was that I believed I mattered, but also I believed I was smart and that I was, that I was worth the time for somebody, like, you know. And I felt like other teachers didn't really give me the time of day always, you know, and would kind of ignore. And I mean, more the story on that is like, I was the kid that they would, I would blurt out the answer, even if it was the right answer, they wouldn't like it because I blurted out the answer. But then they would say, well, can you raise your hand? So then I raised my hand and still blurted out the answer, like, you know, and so I was the kid that just, it came to my head and not knew, like, right. So, so anyway, she just made me really feel like you said, like I mattered. And she taught me also, like, from the Christian standpoint that Jesus cared, right? And I've been taught that my whole life, but, you know, like, when it comes from somebody cooler than your parents or, you know, or whatever, like, you know, it just has a different effect. so yeah.
Definitely, but. Yeah. So, you had some struggles in your childhood years, but I am wondering about, as you thought toward the future, and some kids do at that age and some kids don't, but did you have goals or dreams or hopes for yourself for the future?
Yeah, I mean, kind of when I hit fifth grade, I realized that I could run and run well and run fast. And I was one of the fastest kids in my class. And so I always wanted to be a runner. And that was like my main thing. And then the other side of it was I was good at music. I really loved music and I really loved the beats and I loved learning how to play music. So, and learning how to play instruments. So, I either wanted to be a runner or a musician, or if I could do both, a running musician, that would work too. So, but yeah, so those were really my goals. And obviously, like, you have every kid's goals, like, oh, let's be rich and famous, you know, stuff like that. So, but those were my two, like, main realistic goals. I wanted to be a runner and a musician. So, yeah.
Okay. And then, you had some additional, medical challenges. Can we talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah, for sure. So my eighth grade year is when I started track and field. And my coach actually, I love my coach to death. He's awesome. He actually came to my graduation party. And his line was, once a coach, always a coach. So anyway, he's super good guy. But he actually lied on my forms and for me to run in high school track because I was still in eighth grade. And he said, I'll give you one race, but if you fail in this race, then you're going to be running cross country still. And you got to wait till next year to run track. So we actually lied on my forms. And I ended up winning and beating out a bunch of high school seniors and stuff like that in track and field. So he actually kept me in and kept lying on my forms all year. But I was running actually for a homeschool team at the time, just because public school had gotten so hard. Like, just as a middle schooler, I couldn't do it. And math and science and all that changed so much since my parents were in school and stuff. Like, it was hard for them to help me even. So anyway, it came down to 3 days before state track meet actually. And I was projected to win all of my races, and I was running three events, and the state track meet, you can run four. So my coach was like, well, I'll put you in hurdles. And so all year he had told us not to jump hurdles. Don't jump hurdles because you hurt yourself. And we would just jump them for fun and not listen to them. I mean, you know, we're eighth graders. So so anyway, we got to 3 days before state track meet, and we had a guy that was helping me train on hurdles. And I jumped the first hurdle, and it was good. Jumped the second hurdle, and I actually tore my ACL 3 days before state track meet. And I couldn't run, obviously, in the state track meet. So went straight to the hospital, and it was devastating. And I just remember kind of powering through that and saying, you know, God's got a plan, we're good to go. So long story short, I went to physical therapy down by where I live, and they did a really good job over there, and shout out to Northern Physical Therapy. I'm not sponsored by them in any way. They were born. So those are my people over there. So so I did therapy with them, and I came back actually stronger than I was, and I went to Hopkins Public Schools, and that's where that was my last year actually in the public school. And I really was like, God is I want God to use this, not necessarily like as the school aspect, but kind of as a ministry. And so and obviously, like, I was there to do school and I had to do school, but I wanted God to use my Christian background and I wanted to shine a light at that school because it is a dark place. And so as all public schools typically are. So I ran that year, and my practice schedule was actually, I'd get out of school and run 3 miles before practice, then I would run in practice, and then I'd run 2 miles after practice. So, like, I was running all the time, and, like, I wanted to be super accomplished. And so it got to a week before state track meet, and at that point I was top three in the state of Michigan for the 800, and then top 55 in the country for the 800 also. So I was number two in Michigan, and so it was, there's a meet called the Meet of Champions. I think it's actually in Comstock Park, Michigan. And you had all kinds of big college scouts there, D1 college scouts. And I felt sick, actually. My first race was more of like a warm-up race. I think I just ran like the 200 or something like that, because I just qualified for it. And after you run a race, after you play basketball or something, you don't sleep in the car. And so I told my coach, I said, "Coach, I can't run, like, and I'm feeling super sick." And my coach was like, "Jared, these people are literally here to watch you race." They literally altered the meet, so the 800 was the last race, so people would stay, because they're the top three people in the country at this race in Michigan. So anyway, long story short, I actually ended up going home, and I slept all the way home in the car. And from then on, my mom knew something was wrong. And a day and a half or 2 days later, we ended up in the hospital because I wasn't having these seizures, but I couldn't control my body. I could only feel my head, and I was like shaking and writhing in pain. And anyway, they said I had high blood pressure. And I looked at a video later, and it was of me running, crossing a finish line, and I grabbed my heart and stumbled back 3 times. And right there, the doctors were saying, "Yep, you should have died right there, because your heart was pumping and your blood is actually thicker than normal." So anyway, but that was the first race of the year. So God had actually protected me all throughout my track season while running. And like I said, my running schedule was crazy. So I did that, and I was actually in the hospital, only supposed to be in the hospital for 24 hours, and ended up being over 72 hours in the hospital, and they diagnosed me with viral hepatitis later. So there's been a lot of health struggles, but from then on, I knew, like, God did not want me to do track and field anymore. He wanted me to do music, and so that's where I get into that more. Hello?
Oh, very sorry, Jared. I think we lost connection there for just a minute. Your story is very powerful, I think, and very unique as a young person. For you to have the outlook that you did when faced with these struggles, I think is just amazing. You know, you're talking about third grade and fifth grade and eighth grade, and yet you still have this positive outlook. So you're very much a public figure in your community now, and you are traveling and touring with your music. So congratulations for that. I know that was a dream that you really couldn't have imagined. However, in these more public arenas, you have found yourself faced with a variety of questions about adoption and transracial adoption. And I'd like to spend some time talking about your thoughts on this in particular. I know that one of the questions you shared with me that you've been asked is, how does it feel to be white but not have white privilege? Mm-hmm. First, will you talk about what that question means or implies? And then if you could share your thoughts on how you answered that when it was asked of you.
Yeah, actually, the story behind that question is that question was more of a joke, and just because I had done something, and a lot of people will call me like the whitest black guy they've ever met, and honestly, it's true. Like, I didn't grow up in a African American or black community, which is, I mean, no fault of my own or my parents. I mean, it was just like, I think that's one thing that I didn't think about, or we didn't think about when I was a kid, that having that was really, really important. And so when that question was asked of me, it was more of a joke. And then I started to think about it, and it, like, I couldn't get that out of my head. And it was actually one of my artist friends that asked that question. But I don't know, it's been interesting. And I mean, what we kind of talked about before is the story about the police guy. that stopped me in a place called Hudsonville, Michigan. And so I was, and I'll tell that story really quick, but I was in Hudsonville and it was early in the morning and I was at Meijer and I kind of briskly walked out of Meijer to my car because I need to go pick up some artists in the tour bus. And so I got to my car and actually started driving out of the parking lot, and there's nobody in the parking lot. And so I started driving and I saw a cop actually pull behind me and followed me for like 7 or 8 miles. And I kind of lost them a little bit because I did a Michigan U-turn and I pulled into the church parking lot. And I mean, I was almost out of my car and like all of a sudden, like screeching tires into the back of the church parking lot, lights on. And he's like, put your hands out the window, this, this, and that. And so in that moment, I actually realized that he still sees me as a black man, but I've grown up as a white person like my whole life. And so I had to really, really think like a black person at that point. So I was talking actually to a pastor friend of mine and telling him, like, I feel like in that sense, and obviously you can't, and I'm not bashing cops here at all. And if you are a police person, thank you so much for your service. I really appreciate you guys. But just this particular policeman, like, I mean, he definitely, it was like a racial stereotype thing. And like, I did nothing wrong. I wasn't running with my groceries, you know, stuff like that. Like, why can't I run with my groceries if I want to? Like, you know. So anyway, like, he actually ended up giving me a warning, but he didn't take my license or registration. And like, he just asked me all these different questions. And I said, dude, I'm literally doing ministry. This is our tour bus right here. I have the keys. You can go unlock it if you'd like. Like, I'm not going to steal this thing. You know, I don't have drugs or alcohol. You know, I'm not on anything. Like, I'm literally a Christian musician. Like, that's what I do. So, anyway, like, it was just kind of frustrating to see that and then see somebody like racially stereotype me, and just because like I felt like I was like a law-abiding citizen, like, you know. So yeah, that's what happened with that story. But to really answer your question, like it's a really interesting world because I'm right in between like everything. I'm not like your stereotypical like black guy who's grown up like that, but I'm also not your stereotypical white guy because my skin is black. So it's been interesting growing up.
Well, and the issue that's raised in this that you're talking about is really an issue of identity, and it's an issue that you've been faced with, not just in this instance that you described, but in other instances as well, so particularly when you were younger. What are your feelings on that issue of identity? And you say that, you know, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I don't always feel like I fully belong in the African-American culture, but I may not necessarily fully belong in the white culture either. And so what are your feelings on that? And where does that leave you regarding identity?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you ask that too, just because like, I get that question so much. And, I'm just going to use the example of Christianity, and because I had a person ask me the other day, like, are you Christian Reformed? Are you Baptist? And so like all those different denominations. And I said, no, I don't identify with any of those. I'm actually a follower of Jesus Christ. That's what I am. I'm not under a doctrine like that. So, and so I use that example because it's the same thing with, my race. It's like, and actually in the Bible, it talks about, I just have a little bit more melanin than, you know, than white people do, or, you know, I have a little less melanin than people in Africa do, like, you know, and we're all one race. And I firmly believe that, number one, my Lord and Savior said it, like, you know, and that's all I have to say right there. So, but it's one of those things where, I had to come to terms with myself and say, this is how God made me, and he has me here for a reason, just in this position. But then also say, like, my identity is not in my skin color, it's not in my music, and it's not in my running. It's in like Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ is my identity there. So yeah.
Very well. One of the things that you also shared with me, Jared, was that you have now been in a position to be able to be a mentor to other children who may be struggling with their adoption feelings or struggling with this transracial adoption component as well. What do you say to them? What are those conversations like? What is the message that you hope to relay to those kids?
Right. One of my biggest messages is like, if I did it, you can do it. Like, you know, and I've been able to get through life. And we mentioned earlier too, like, I mean, I'm a full-time professional DJ and, you know, I get to sing all over the country. I've shared stages with Matthew West and Sidewalk Prophets and all those guys, you know, and it's one of those things where I definitely thought I would never be able to do that. And realizing that my identity wasn't Jesus Christ and not my skin color, it was like a huge turning point for me. And just there's been certain people in my life where they have all influenced that. My grandparents were a big one. My family was a big one. And obviously Mrs. Ritter and my coach and so many other people. But the one thing I didn't have when I was a kid was a strong Black influence. So I wanted to be that for several young boys and several young girls too, where I can help with that section of it. Now, I get a lot of questions just like you asked, and a lot of questions like, well, what, my parents cut my hair and I get made fun of at school because of my hairline and, you know, this and that. And I always say to them, I say, you know, whether you're white, Black, you know, or any other race, it's, you're going to get made fun of either way. You cannot get away from that. But the one thing you can know is that like your dad or you're up in heaven, like he loves you so much and he's going to take care of you. And what these kids say, like none of that really matters. And it's funny because I was talking to a pastor friend of mine, and he was like, so how many, just out of curiosity, how many friends from high school do you still hang out with? And I was legitimately thinking from Hopkins High School, how many kids I hang out with? And I was like, zero, you know, like same thing in middle school. It's just like none. So, and I think that's very, very typical with kids where it's like, you get out of high school and you think, you know, your posse is still going to be together and whatnot. And, you know, they're not there anymore, which they're all over. Mm-hmm. They're all at college or they're all in their careers. And we just all get busy. Like half of my friends are actually getting married at this point. I'm only 20 years old, like, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of just been interesting and been able to like try to speak life into their life and even help their parents too in that. And just like their parents ask me questions, like, how do we deal with this situation? I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I've lived through a lot of that, even just as a 20-year-old. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So two of the issues that are common in transracial adoption that you've addressed, and that's lack of diversity and adoptees struggling with race and cultural self-identity. These are complicated and sensitive subjects. So I do really appreciate your candidness, Jared, on that. There is one final issue that's common within transracial adoption, and that's dealing with the issues of racism, particularly for white parents who have never experienced racial stereotypes or discriminations. Would you like to address the issue of racism at all in this podcast?
Yeah, no, I definitely can. I mean, and like, I know, like, even when we were talking about racism, I was telling you the story just about a school actually asked me to come talk about racism. And I said, no, I don't want to come talk about racism. I want to come talk about Jesus Christ and salvation. Because if everybody read their Bible and everybody understood salvation and how Jesus walked through, there would be no racism around. And actually, I was talking to another pastor friend of mine, and I told him I did this video one time. It was a manger scene, and Jesus was this very pale white figure. And I said to people right over my Instagram, I have like 4,000 followers on Instagram, whatever. But I said to them, I said, Jesus was never this color. Like he was out in the sun all the time. Like he was actually probably as dark as I was, like, you know? So it's just kind of interesting how we portray Jesus. And like as this, this figure that was, his skin was, you know, super fine and white, but there was no way he looked like that. So, so anyway, that's kind of been interesting. And that even has helped me explain like to kids that are adopted, just to even explain like, you know, Jesus wasn't actually this white color that people portray him as. He was a darker color. He was, he was out in the sun all the time, so he couldn't have been white like that. So,
right.
So, I mean, the racism part of it too is like, no matter how much money you have or how much money you are or are adopting kids into or have been adopted into, like, I could have all the money in the world, but that racism problem does not go away. And I think that's very, very important to have somebody who is a Black influence in your life. So I know we're kind of running out of time, but that's more how I would explain that. So.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And obviously, you know, we've talked a lot here about issues pertaining to transracial adoption, issues that we want adoptive parents to be aware of. And that doesn't mean that Caucasian parents cannot do a very good job of parenting children of different races. But there are the issues to be aware of and how for the wholeness and well-being of a child, families can support children by understanding what those discriminations and biases are. So we are, as you mentioned, Jared, beginning to approach the end of the program, but I did want to give you an opportunity to share any final thoughts that you have or a message in particular that you'd like for our listeners to hear from you.
Yeah, for sure. The one big thing I do want to say is, like, and I kind of talked to you when we were just talking offline, like, and the one thing I want to say is, like, adoption is, like, it's hard. It really is. It's a struggle. And especially if you adopt kids that are, like, mid-age, and, you know, they come with a lot of baggage. And I would even say we come with a lot of baggage. I was adopted as a baby, so I was very fortunate. But the one thing, like, I don't want you to shy away from adoption, but that's more of a reason to run to it. Just because there are a lot of kids with that baggage, and the less baggage they can bring, the better, right? And so the longer they're in a foster care system or the longer they're in a bad situation, the more they come with. And to get them out of that situation is just so good. And I'm so thankful shout out to my parents and my family, but I'm so thankful for my family that I was able to be adopted as young as I was and not come with a lot of that baggage of foster care. And for those of you that are adopted and are listening, like, I do encourage you, like, keep going, because you do matter and you have people that love you. Your adopted family loves you, and above all, Jesus loves you. And honestly, like, I don't know where exactly this will all be posted, but if you would like to throw my email at the bottom of this too, like, I would love to get emails from you guys. And if you have any questions or even comments about this, I would love to talk to each one of you. And I'm happy to answer emails as best I can. So, but I do want to say, like, thank you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on this podcast and everything. And I hope to see you guys soon. So, yeah. But.
Awesome. Thank you, Jared, so very much for kind of walking with me through what is a complex topic of transracial adoption and the issues that are surrounding that. And we appreciate you sharing your personal story as well. For our listeners looking to connect with Adoption Associates, we would love to hear from you. And you can reach us at 800-677-2367. If you have any particular topics of interest that you'd like to hear us cover on the podcast, we'd love to hear from you on that as well. Other ways to connect with Adoption Associates are through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the website at adoptionassociates.net. We will continue to bring adoption-focused programming to you via the podcast and hope that you continue to support this program of Adoption Associates. Jared, once again, thank you very much for your time and for all of the wonderful things you said today.
That's no problem. God bless you guys, and thank you for what you're doing over there at Adoption Associates. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared. For now, this is Jennifer with Adoption Focus. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.